The American dream has always included owning a home. Home to raise a family in, a home to provide security and stability, a home to retire in. An American dream, although, has now turned into an American challenge thanks to the rapid growth of corporate home buying. That's what it's referred to. This exploding trend in real estate has turned a level playing field into a narrow door for individuals looking for that American dream. With us to explain how widespread this trend has become in New Jersey, the impact it's had on not just potential home buyers, but tenants as well, and the steps needed to bring things back to that level playing field, is a Rutgers Law School Distinguished Professor of Law. He's also director of the Center on Law, Inequality, and Metropolitan Equity, Professor David Trout. How are you today, Professor?
I'm good. Good morning. How are you doing?
Very good to have you here. Learn more about the Center on Law, Inequality, and Metropolitan Equity at clime.rutgers.edu. And, of course, to learn about the educational opportunities at Rutgers overall, that is, right, rutgers.edu. We do have those links over at our website. So give us an overview. I refer to the fact of the rapid growth of corporate home buying, more specifically under what's called LLCs. We'll get into why that's the preferred option two for these individuals and groups, come to think of it, in a bit. But overall, what's been happening with this whole concept?
So the buy-to-rent movement for single-family rentals and one-to-four-unit rentals generally begins with the Great Recession and the foreclosure crisis, when so many communities with single-family homes were seeing a rise in vacancies. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were very concerned. Other government-sponsored entities were trying to entice private equity and street firms to get involved in the purchase of these homes in order to save neighborhoods, admittedly. And these firms were, for the most part, especially given that time, reluctant to do it. But within a couple of years, a new asset class was born that has become extraordinarily profitable and has swept over neighborhoods across the South and the Southwest in particular, as well as the Midwest. And unfortunately, because of the racially disproportionate impact of the foreclosure crisis, so many of these homes were in Black communities, often middle-class Black communities or lower-middle-class Black communities, adjacent to metropolitan areas of growth. And so there was a real upside coming out of the recession for conglomerates, for institutional investors that owned a substantial number of these homes, because the very people whom they would be renting to, as we became more and more a nation of renters, were people who had previously been owned. So people who are very concerned about stability and maintaining their payments and who have steady employment and all those things that landlords typically look for in their renters. And so we were curious at Clime to see the extent of corporate buying in New Jersey, and particularly in cities like Newark. The studies that had been published on it, many of which were terrific journalistic investigations, indicated sort of this broad swath of corporate buying that began in, say, 2010, 2011, 2012, and just has accelerated to the present day, where in cities like Atlanta, you see as many as 20 to 25% of 1-to-4-unit homes being purchased by institutional buyers, primarily for the purpose of renting. We wanted to know whether that phenomenon was occurring in Newark. And what we found was really quite surprising. We found that it is occurring in Newark. It does track pretty much the same period. There's been a threefold increase in purchases by institutional buyers of 1-to-4-unit homes in Newark, particularly in two wards and in about five or six neighborhoods of those wards that used to be predominantly Black and predominantly homeowners, but that the rate was substantially higher than what was even being seen in cities like Atlanta.
Wow.
And that's at about 47%. So in the last few years, about half of sales of 1-to-4-unit homes in Newark generally, concentrated in these particular wards, the South and the West, gone to institutional buyers.
And it is not just Newark. If you want to pull the lens back a little bit, I guess you'd call these the heavily targeted cities just in New Jersey, places like Asbury Park and Trenton, Camden, Willingboro, Woodland, Keensburg, Patterson, South Toms River. If you look at it, want to pull the scale out, camera out even further, it was fourth quarter of 2021, real estate investors bought a record 18.4% of the homes that were sold in the United States overall. Professor, that's a lot of real estate.
That's a lot of real estate. It's a lot of rental proceeds, and it's steady gains for the fortunate investors who can get into what are usually private placement arrangements, shrouded in secrecy, but incredibly lucrative.
I was looking at some of the housing wise. And we've talked a lot here on the show about the nursing home disasters that have happened in the state. And part of the problem is how the actual ownership of those facilities are really a mystery in so many cases. And trying to find out who to blame or even who to sue is a challenge. A lot of that could be said for these institutional real estate owners.
Yeah, it's really quite surprising. The whole phenomenon raises the specter of the company town in which the housing is owned by the main company for which everyone works, but with a new wrinkle where you don't actually know who the company is. And then the idea that the identity of the tenant is so critically important to everything that we think of in terms of rental markets, but the identity of the landlord is not, is upside down. We really need much more transparency of ownership for a variety of reasons, not the least of which are tenant protections and basic consumer protection ideas. These are private transactions between two entities. One is known, the other may not be.
Talking to Professor David Trout, distinguished professor of law, Rutgers Law School, also director of the Center on Law, Inequality, and Metropolitan Equity. Climb, CLIME.Rutgers.edu, and for Rutgers overall, it is Rutgers.edu, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Further putting the individual wannabe homeowner behind the eight ball is the fact that once one of these LLCs or corporate buyers have really just maybe two properties, three properties, they're set to keep the snowball rolling because they're sitting on a lot of equity, which makes getting number three, number four, number five a lot more rapid than it was at number one, two, and three.
Yeah, they usually come in at a higher rate than that, we found. Maybe not at the rate of some of the national firms like Invitation Homes, et cetera, you know, where they come in and buy hundreds and hundreds at a time. But they don't tend to buy at the level of one, two, and three, which is more closely associated with what many people locally will do. You know, many folks own a few investment properties in the adjacent town or in the town in which they once lived and now they've moved on, but they maintain a presence there, an ownership presence. Institutional buyers come in with a lot more cash. I mean, that's one of the distinguishing characteristics of the model. They come in wherever it comes from private equity. It's very difficult to know who they are because, like most real estate transactions, they're done behind the veil of a limited liability corporation, an LLC. And depending on their particular status, their particular legal status, the securities laws may protect them from having to disclose who the investors are, who the ownership group really is. And then they clearly go to great lengths to hide in many instances, who they are, through shell companies, through a variety of labyrinthine arrangements that were very hard to investigate. And we subsequently learned, you know, peeled back only half of the onion. So the whole question of who these owners is a very difficult one to answer, but it's very clear what they have. And that is a tremendous amount of capital in order to buy as many units as they can. They do so in a concerted effort in many cases, including, you know, knocking on doors, cold calling. They've got, you know, many of them use robocall centers They're buying proprietary lists of people's cell numbers. There's a real campaign of harassment. They target particular potential sellers, either elderly people or people who have missed a payment, you know, on a mortgage and therefore may be in distress and are what they call willing or motivated sellers. So there's a whole science behind it, or at least a business strategy behind it, which comes at scale and pays with cash.
Have to bring things to an end here. I just want to give you a little mechanic about the LLC. It gives you a little extra protection against lawsuits or debts. And just to show you how widespread the LLC concept is, property records reveal at least 72,000 active LLC owners just in New Jersey in 2021. That is easily way above other types of businesses. Professor, we always want to look to laws, regulations, policies to fix a problem. Well, first things first, did the housing bubble bursting create laws and policies that created this problem? And second, why would the state want to change things? Because right now the state's got guaranteed property taxpayers. That's going to be a little tough to convince them to want to put any of that dollars at risk.
Yeah, well, I mean, those dollars probably are not at grave risk, you know, maybe at the margins, but probably not in terms of the norm, because there is still, despite rising interest rates and, a slackening housing market, real demand. I mean, people, it's become more costly, and that's hurting demand, but that doesn't mean that there isn't tremendous consumer demand for housing. They're just being beat out, or inventory is never making it to the public market, so that buyers can bid on them. So, what we would really want to see the state do is to recognize the public interest in home ownership and to recognize the public interest in safe, decent, and affordable rentals. It's critically important for our schools, for our employment centers, that parents are able to maintain housing security for their children. It's critically important in terms of our income-producing capacity of families to have stable housing. Stable housing is at the root of so much from a public health standpoint, in terms of people's mental health, in terms of people's physical health. And, of course, we discovered the pandemic, how critically important it is to have a place to shelter in place in the event that we see another revival of the virus. So there are any number of public health reasons, economic reasons, other public interests that compel the state to want to move in to curb abuses. And that's very important to emphasize, because there is really nothing illegal about buying homes and renting them out. It's constitutionally protected contractual activity. And so that's not the area where the state necessarily wants to come in. The state wants to come in where either preferential treatment through our laws is allowing these market players to have too much leverage and they're forcing out home buyers, or where it's affecting the rights of tenants because people are being bullied and managed aggressively, hit with fees, and increasing their risks of displacement and homelessness, or where we're simply facing public health problems with landlords who are not responsive because they don't have to be. They're instead more concerned about their investors to whom they owe a fiduciary duty, and they're not worried about, you know, abating the mold problem, which is putting children and adults' health at risk. So those are the areas where local and state public actors need to step in and recognize that we're in a new day, that we're dealing with corporate landlords, that corporate landlords have different kinds of incentives for maintenance, for whom they want in their properties, and how they're going to treat them. They have a tremendous amount of leverage. It's a situation of vastly unequal bargaining power, and it's in precisely those moments over an issue as important as housing and home ownership that the state needs to come in to help level the playing field.
There's some great reports for you that you can absorb and really become a lot more aware of the degree of this challenge to fairness in the housing market at the website for the Center on Law, Inequality, and Metropolitan Equity. We have the link at our page. It's CLIME, C-L-I-M-E, .Rutgers.edu. And you can also learn more about Rutgers University at Rutgers.edu. He is a Rutgers Law School Distinguished Professor of Law and Director of the Center on Law, Inequality, and Metropolitan Equity. Professor David Trout, thanks for raising the awareness and really helping people get a better understanding of what they may be even experiencing and the challenges that they're facing. Information brings about answers, and hopefully this will motivate those in legal seats and leadership seats to rethink some of the policies that are tipping the scale, shall we say, in this matter. Thanks so much for the work you're doing for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me.